encouraging the development of desires, and the encourages the development of going actually against nature. One of our devotees in Serbia became very famous with his work on what is called the Black Series. For many years he traveled together with the police and made the most shocking documentaries of crime. He became very famous with this and then developed his own project, his own TV emission, where he actually took up crimes which could not be solved by the police. He put them up and aired them out over the TV, and people were actually helping to solve the crimes. And this brought in a wave of, let me say, righteousness amongst the people, which also helped, amongst other factors, to throw over the very, let me say, violent and corrupt government of Serbia. They do now have a different democratic government. I requested this devotee, Igor, Bhakta Igor, to make a little show overcoming pride, and he made this. It is called Quo Vadis. Quo Vadis means where are we going? It's something which again you have to look with the same eye as the first little presentation which you saw in this seminar, the presentation about the masks. It's something where you just relax and let the pictures work on you. But I want to say to you, especially the Matajis who have built their houses often next to the ocean, and some water is there in their personality, this won't be as intense as the first thing. Now, let me make sure, can you all see very nicely? Sudevi, can you see from your angle? Yes? Namamrita, you can see everything? So, it starts really, I will explain you just this much. It starts with Krishna, who created the world by his glance, and then you will see what the human being did with the world after developing pride or the false ego of identifying with the body. So I wish you a very nice viewing time. It's only 7 minutes, so please pay full attention. We can start. Where are we going? I thought it's a really impressive presentation of the statement, pride comes before the fall. It's a very, very strong statement. So the Vedic culture goes the other way around. It goes the way of offering respect and receiving blessings. That's the point of this culture. Maybe while I talk, devotees can be so kind to again open the windows and also so that fresh air comes in, huh? Not just the curtains, but also the... Yes, please, please. He said if you can leave it for the recording. What is about our society for Krishna consciousness? and our life in this society. I feel so often pride enters in many unseen forms. One is in judging Vaishnavas. There are some amazing texts from Bhaktivinoda Thakur and other acharyas which tell us that it's very important that we do not judge Vaishnavas. There's one song which describes why it is difficult to judge Vaishnavas. The song says, Lord Krishna desired to become Lord Gaura, and so he incarnated at Navadvip along with his abode in Vaikuntha. When Lord Krishna comes to this material world, to deliver the living entities, all of his associates accompany him. In his incarnation as Sri Gaurachandra, his two doorkeepers, Sri Jai and Sri Vijay, appeared as his enemies. But the scriptures state that Jai and Vijay were demons in the previous incarnations, but in this pastime, they were born as learned brahmanas. They exhibited enmity towards the Lord on the strength of their knowledge of smriti and logic. Being fully intoxicated with pride, they even fought with Lord Gaurachandra. But then Bhaktivinoda Thakur takes an amazing bent. He says that this fighting with Lord Gaurachandra is wonderful. It belongs to the pastime. It is praiseworthy. It is actually very saintly. He says, in this way, all of the residents of Navadvip constantly nourish the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya. The enemies of Sri Chaitanya, who have now appeared in a family of brahmanas, are certainly nourishers of his pastimes. They're very good. I bow down at the lotus feet of all the associates of Sri Chaitanya. They have appeared as either friends or enemies of the Lord, but they are equally praiseworthy. All of you, please bestow mercy upon this servant and thus make the mind of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur fixed at the lotus feet of Sri Chaitanya. Yes, on one side, the disturbances created by Ramachandra Puri were very bad. But without Ramachandra Puri having created these disturbances, the glories of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not have been exhibited. They helped Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Do you know who's Ramachandra Puri in Krishna Leela? Yatila. Wow. Vishwakma knows everything. He is Yatila, an eternal associate of the Lord. So you can see in the pastimes of the Lord, the so-called enemies are also friends who are to be respected and paid obeisances. Just as the so-called enemies in the pastimes of the Lord can be viewed as saintly personalities who help the pastimes, also your little enemies who do not give you enough prasadam or who steal your sweets, they can be seen with a different perspective as personalities who have been inspired by Lord Krishna to act in a way which is necessary to correct you on your way, which gives you essential nourishment in your spiritual life. I would very, very much like to now tell you a beautiful Leela of Lord Krishna involving Lord Vishnu, involving Bhrigu Muni, who at the very first sight will look with his activity as being too much. But when you see and understand it a little bit better, you see that even Bhrigu Muni had his place in Krishna Leela. I will from this go into a very difficult area, that is, what do we do with those who hurt us? So you please listen very carefully. Your intelligence will be challenged today. We will go now a little deep. Little drama. It's a little bit too dramatic. One moment. Once the devatas wanted to find out who's supreme. Is it Brahma? Is it Shiva? Or is it Vishnu? So they sent Bhrigu Muni to test these respective high personality. Bhrigu Muni first went to Lord Brahma, his brother. Brahma was so happy. Welcome, brother Bhrigu. But Bhrigu just looked. You have no good word for me? You do not like me? This is too much. You are too much. Bhrigu, get out of my vision. Bhrigu left. He knew enough. How could Brahma be supreme if he could not control his anger? Upon being slightly disrespected, he became upset. He can't be in control of the mind and senses. He went to Lord... Brahma was the father, I'm sorry, not the brother of Bhrigu Muni. Brahma said, you don't respect your father? This is too much. Said bad words. Then Bhrigu Muni went to Lord Shiva. When Lord Shiva saw his brother, he was so happy. He wanted to embrace him. But this time Bhrigu Muni said something disrespectful. First he thought something disrespectful, now he said something disrespectful. He said, your smell is a little aggressive, brother. You go a graveyard and don't take a regular shower. Please don't touch me. Shiva became so absolutely enraged that he took his trident, ran towards Bhrigu, ready to kill him. The last minute, Parvati, his wife, came in between and stopped Lord Shiva, begging him, don't kill your brother, and he's a Brahmana. Bhrigu Muni knew enough. Also Lord Shiva was apparently not able to resist the strong attack of anger. Now he went to Vishnu. Vishnu was just lying on the bed of Anantashesha, and his dear wife Lakshmi massaged his lotus feet. Many narrators have not told you this before. Bhrigu came from the back. If Lord Vishnu was lying here, He came from the back purposefully so that only Lakshmi could see him, not Vishnu. And he decided to now make an offense with the body. He took his foot, left foot, and just kicked, on the chest of Lord Vishnu, while his wife was massaging his feet. Those of you who are grihastas, grihastha men, how would you react if in a very confidential, very happy, very private, even loving meeting with your wife, someone would intrude your apartment and then kick you on your sacred chest? You would be so angered. Dinadayal, imagine your reaction. You would run to the kitchen and inspect immediately the different knives and choose one appropriate knife. You know. We would be highly enraged. This is so offensive. But Vishnu jumped up and said, "My dear Brahmana, today my life is fortunate because your feet, which are worshipable by the whole creation, have touched my chest. My only worry is that my chest is so hard and uncomfortable for your foot, so that you might have hurt your foot slightly upon touching my stone-like chest. Please, my dear Brahmana, forgive me." Vishnu paid his obeisances and bathed the feet of Bhrigu Muni. So you might now, let us stop here for a while and analyze. How could Bhrigu do such a thing? Can you imagine to do such a thing? You know, go into Vishvatma's apartment when he is, you know, we don't even want to go through the length of the experience. It is something so outrageous, isn't it? It's something so that we don't even consider it. Bhrigu himself asked himself afterwards, "How could I have done it?" Yes, he also knew. He knew Vishnu is so much beyond all feelings of revenge and personal hurt that he must be the supreme. He is totally transcendental. But his mind was asking himself, how could I do such a thing? How could I do such a thing? Foolish mind. He was really very, very disturbed by his third test. The answer is given. The Lord actually entered his heart and made him do this, so that, again, the glories of the Lord would be shown once and for all. Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur extracts a principle from this Leela, which I feel is very important in this connection. He says, Adama janera yeche acharena dama adhikari vaishnaveo karese karma krishna kripaye seiha jani pare pare esa basankate keho more keho tare sabaite tekiye ka mahapratikara sabara kariba stuti vinaya vyahara. Sometimes an exalted Vaishnava exhibits the same behavior and characteristics as a materialistic person. The conclusion is that only... So how can we understand who is a high Vaishnava whom we should respect and who is a low person whom we should not respect? Sometimes even an exalted Vaishnava exhibits the same behavior and characteristics of a materialistic person. The conclusion is now that only by the mercy of Krishna can one understand a great Vaishnava. Otherwise, in such intricate situations, one may be either liberated or destroyed. So, I don't know if it's so clear to you why we read this. The question is, how do we assess a Vaishnava? It's sometimes so difficult to know who's high, who's not high. So Vrindavan Das Thakur says, but I have found a wonderful solution to this problem. One should always glorify all Vaishnavas and behave humbly with all. Thinking oneself a fool, one should surrender to Krishna and carefully listen to the words of advanced devotees. Then Lord Krishna will impart one with transcendental intelligence by which one is completely delivered without hindrance. I wanted to say that sometimes we ask the question, should we distinguish between a Vaishnava, between Vaishnavas? Should we say, okay, this one is to be respected and this one not? And the answer which Vrindavan Das Thakur gives from this Leela is, don't. Best be humbly towards all Vaishnavas. Because you never know. Even an advanced Vaishnava may sometimes behave in ways which are difficult for us to digest. So better be humbly with all. And you know, the reason for this is that in Vaishnav culture, we are more interested in getting blessings than getting right. When you are criticized because you know that you want blessings, you should always be super careful. To get right is only the concept of the Western civilization. To be right, to get my right through, and so on. We are not so much interested in this. We are interested to live a spiritual life, and so on. I know that these we will explore now very difficult subjects, and I'm going into something where you really need to listen to what that you hear me correct. A Brahmana should see material prestige like poison, and the critic like nectar. When you learn to tolerate dishonor, your agitation goes down, and you are able to sleep happily. And when you wake up, move blissfully in this world. Whereas the critic who insults you becomes embarrassed as a result of his sins, and his happiness in his next life becomes diminished. And do you understand? This brings some very, very interesting points. Someone who criticizes you, he takes your karma away from you, your bad karma. Listen to this from the Mahabharata, from the Shantipava. One who, if you remain tolerant, not becoming angry, certainly you will attain the abuser's pious credits. You get his good karma. Indeed, your own sins are transferred to that wrathful person. It's a karmic exchange which takes place. That person who has criticized like this, he will get a lot of karma. Have you ever felt when you were in a session of critics. Now this is bad. In our movement, this is absolutely bad. And the swamis are very bad. The gurus are even worse. And there is no righteousness. And look at the history. All the errors of human behavior are present in this movement. How do you feel after this? You feel, oh, Hare Krishna. Oh. The energy, your own energy has left you. It is said, no man can concentrate his attention on evil or even the idea of evil and remain unaffected. To be more against the demon than for godliness is exceedingly dangerous. Every crusader is apt to go mad. He is haunted by the wickedness that he attributes to his enemies. It becomes sort of a part of him. This is not by a spiritual he's a spiritual person who's but this is by the English writer and philosopher Sir Aldous or Aldous Huxley. He makes a very, very nice point. If you engage your mind with evil and bad, doesn't matter if you criticize it or if you are for it. As long as you are dwelling on bad things, you yourself will invite this bad energy in your mind and it will stay there. I'm speaking now from a very transcendental perspective. We will in a moment go to what to do with these truths when we attain the social level, the Lokika level. We will deal differently with it. But now we talk purely on the spiritual level. I have seen this where, for instance, there were many, when men talk, the renounced men talk about women, and they talk despairingly about women, and they talk how women are foolish and this and that. They will eventually think only of women, and in this way they will leave their brahmachari ashram. I have seen this very, very often. Or anyone who engages his mind day and night with a subject matter, he will become haunted by this. This principle spoke for Kamsa. Kamsa only thought about Krishna, how he hated Krishna, how he disliked Krishna. In the end, he was Krishna conscious. So if you think about material things which you don't like from morning till evening, in the end, you will be haunted by the material things. There's a very, 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 very true and very dangerous also. It is said, the ignorant seek to injure the wise by malice and backbiting. By doing so, the critic takes upon himself the load of the wise man's sins, which he, the wise man, casts off by forgiving the ignorant. Have you understood this, or should I read it again? Read it again, okay. The ignorant people want to injure the wise by malice and backbiting. But by doing so, you know, by talking bad and maliciously about someone, the critic takes upon himself the load of the wise man's sin. He takes the bad karma from the wise man. And the wise man casts off this bad karma by forgiving the ignorant. He says, you said whatever you had to say according to your level of advancement and knowledge. This is something which we Westerners need to hear more. I will give you an example of how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur dealt with this. He had a lecture tour once, and at the end of the lecture tour, there was always this one critic who blasphemed him before the audience. It was a nice program, and then the man got up and said, "He does not know," and then said many bad things. So the disciples of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur were so disturbed that they said, "Guru Maharaj, give us the permission to give him a solid slap." Solid slapping. No, said Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. "One who criticizes me is my friend." Now again, this was not just a witty or play-wise statement. He actually meant it. When this critic did not come to one of his later programs, he asked, "Where is my friend?" And then he heard that this man had died. By the way, it was a natural death. He was not killed. When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur heard that this critic is now dead, he actually cried upon having tears, hot tears, which you cry upon losing your best friend. Rangadevi, this is amazing, isn't it? This is a totally new perspective to being. We are often so super sensitive. "Oh, this person criticized me. Oh, how can I exist? How can I go on in my life? Oh no, I really now must get on the email and I must write hours and hours and justify my situation. And this was meant like this and this and this and this and this." But in spiritual life, we should understand this person who criticizes us plays a role and or plays an important role, and if he criticizes unjustly, then it's also good, because it takes away our bad karma. It purifies us. This is an amazing concept. Please explore this concept, my dear devotees. Think about this. But if you don't forgive the critic, and you know, you just want to, "Okay, now he criticized me. Now I will put a stone on the, actually a rock on the tower of the Radha Desh mansion, and when he comes for Mangal Arati tomorrow morning, then this stone will fall upon him, the rock, and he will become a sabji to be served for breakfast." You know, if we are becoming revengeful and so on, we don't, the benefit is not ours. I'm sorry, you can see by my language that I'm a very bad person, that I can even think of such a thing. Let us explore this a little bit more. This was from throughout his life, a Brahmana, this is again from Manu Sanghita, it is quoted by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Brahmana O Vaishnava. "Throughout his life, a Brahmana should consider material prestige to be like poison and dishonor to be like nectar. After all, if one learns to tolerate dishonor, then his agitation will subside and he will happily sleep, happily wake, and happily move about. The person who insults him will, because of his sin, become regretful, and his happiness in this and the next life will be vanquished." These are some amazing statements, which illustrate how the critic takes the bad karma, and certainly we shouldn't wish this to happen. But this is what happens, and I believe all of us have the experience if we engage in critical talk, where we hurt others in our talk, and so on. We feel afterwards depleted of energy. It just comes into your mind, this negative, bad energy, and it stays there and makes you makes a problem. In the ninth canto, and I will end with this quotation. Ninth canto, chapter 15, text 40, it says, the duty of a brahmana is to culture the quality of forgiveness, which is illuminating like the sun. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is pleased with those who are forgiving. And Srila Prabhupada, he says something very wonderful in his purpose. He says, different personalities become beautiful by possessing different qualities. Chanakya Pandit says that the cuckoo bird, although very black, is beautiful because of its sweet voice. Cuckoo, cuckoo, cuckoo. Similarly, a woman becomes beautiful by her chastity and faithfulness to her husband. And an ugly person becomes beautiful when he becomes a learned scholar. If you're ugly, you should become a learned scholar. Then Bhaktivedanta College, all of us will become extremely beautiful. But I have not seen any ugly person in the Bhaktivedanta College. But even if an ugly person should join us, he will become beautiful. What to speak of the beautiful persons? In the same way, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras become beautiful by their qualities. Brahmanas are beautiful when they are forgiving. Kshatriyas, when they are heroic and never retreat from fighting. Vaishyas, when they enrich cultural activities and protect cows. And Shudras are beautiful when they are faithful in the discharge of duties pleasing to their masters. Thus everyone becomes beautiful by his special quality. And the special quality of the Brahmana, as described here, is forgiveness. See, this does not mean... this is very, very interesting. Brahmanas should be forgiving, but when there is an actual injustice done, then we should have Kshatriyas or personalities who take care on that social level of the injustice to right the wrong, and they become beautiful by not giving up before the injustice is cured. But generally, as Vaishnavas, we should always keep this in mind to at least develop develop this ideal of forgiveness. Vaishnavas are supposed to imbibe the Brahmana qualities and be more than Brahmanas even. But this does not mean that the wrong things should not be dealt with on another level. There are many seminars in ISKCON now about this, and you have heard many things about this. So it is obvious that this must be done. But listen a little bit more about the good person from Narada Purana. A good person finds good qualities even in a fool. Even on the deathbed, he wishes good for others. He is like a sandalwood tree. Even when cut by an axe, he makes the edge of the axe fragrant. Smell this. That is possible only when
one is saralata, that is, one looks for an one really wants to make spiritual advancement. That is the most important thing in one's life. One looks for the essence. Then one can go in this way and develop this humility. I would like to give you an example because it's such a subtle point which will make you laugh and think. I want to talk with this example. It's my last thing. About how in spiritual life we develop a different value system. Different things become valuable for us than they were in material life. Kyo, this is a very good example which you can use in your lectures when you give lectures as a theology professor. There was this one sadhu. He was going with a boat over the Jamuna. The boat was full with many, many people. We will show you tomorrow evening such a boat. Remember the boat? We will show you a picture of a boat, small boat, where there are 9 cows on it. It's an Indian, you know, the Indian conceptions of using space are very, very different than the Western. So this sadhu was with it on a totally filled up boat crossing the Yamuna when a storm happened to fall upon the boat. The boat started to sink and soon a leak. Do we say this in English also? A leak? A leak. A leak came in the boat. So the boatmen and everyone were just frantically engaged. And, you know, taking anything they found, even their glass holders, you know, to throw the water out. There was only one little sadhu in the back who took water from the Yamuna and filled it in the boat. First he went unnoticed. But then everyone noticed the sadhu filling the boat full with water. Everyone else was trying to get the water out. They said, "Sadhu Maharaj," and they captured him. The thinking processes are in order. You feel well, or a little bit heat in the head? Why are you doing this? We are drowning. The sadhu said with perfect clarity, "I don't want to get into the way of Krishna's plan. He may plan that we drown today and that we go back to Godhead because we are drowning in the Yamuna to go back to Godhead. I don't want to get into the and act against the plan of the Lord." As I would say, this is a folklore, it's not a very philosophical story, but I think it makes a point that when you are considering your spiritual advancement to be the most important project in your life, you will deal with projects like humility or giving respect in a different way than if you think your material well-being is your supreme, value in your life. This is thought-provoking, isn't it? Now we have something to think about.
As I said when I started the seminar, the seminar is something for you to think about, to reflect about, and whatever seems to be possible for you or good for you or relevant for you, you should apply that and see if something, some new realization comes in your life, and you should pray that Krishna will help you on the way to understanding things. I'm very much aware that in this presentation a lot has to be said and can be said, but I just wanted to give this presentation to give some perspectives on A, the culture of pride and what it does or has done to the world, and I wanted to contrast it with information about the culture of humility and what it means. Again, I wanted to build up such a contrast so that we can think about where our position is. And please position yourself. How much humility you should give. I think what Tattvavit Prabhu said on that one beginning is very, very relevant. We should be very. We should act with discrimination when we give our respect, and humility, and so on. Yes. Krishna. Now I'm looking at the clock. I wanted to end at 6:15, and we have reached this time already. If you have any questions regarding this, I would suggest that tomorrow we deal with any questions. I will give you a summary of today, and then we will discuss a little bit. And then I'm very, very happy to say that there remain only a few easy subjects for us to work on. One is how to practice humility, how to do this really. How did you like the theater play, if I may ask? It was very nice, huh? I thought, again, some of you were not here when I said it, we should play this for the community, because it's such a nice theater play. Tomorrow? Days are running by so fast. Tomorrow evening, we should play it. And therefore, please don't tell in great detail what you saw. You may only say that you saw 3 or 4 new theater stars. Actually, 3. Kai is already known here and has her fans. But up to now, Dina Dayal and Gio and Gopeshwari did not yet have a fan club on their own. So this will start tomorrow. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sisi Radha Gopinatha ki, Gaura Prema Nandi Hari Hari Bol.